something flammable in your glass. It's Jada Gamercast. My name is Lang. With me, as always, is Nathan. Nathan, I'm drinking scotch.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a good week.
Indeed.
Indeed, it has been a good week. And I always feel like it's a good week when I get excited for a new game.
Yes.
Which is equally fun because I got a chance to actually play. I'll kind of go into this a little bit more in this week in hobby, but play a little bit more of the Marvel Dice Masters that I got into.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun. I like it.
Okay.
Enjoyable. But what are you drinking, Nathan?
You know what I'm drinking because I texted you as we were about to start. I'm like, you know what? I want Guinness. I'm going to the liquor store. Because I was just thinking about it. I'm like, okay, I'll get the ice. I'll get the gin. I'm like, you know what? Fuck, I want Guinness. So we made that shit happen.
Fair enough. All right. So let's get right into what we did this week in hobby. So, as I said, I was playing a bit of Marvel Dice Masters, which I picked up a bunch of. Played a little bit with my son, which was fun, but it's still just a bit too complicated for him. He absolutely gets the game mechanics, but none of the special abilities. So it's like, we could absolutely, you know, like play the game, and he kind of understands it, but I think it's like...
It's like playing Attack Wings with actions.
Exactly, like, right? Like
you can just do ship-to-ship jousting. And
right, you can only go so far. You're just kind of using stat lines, and then that's where it ends. But I did play with good old John Kingsway there. It was very entertaining. We played for about four hours straight. I think we ended up playing around like 9 or 10 games. But it was a good time. I really enjoyed it. What about you,
Nathan? Well, that's good to hear. Sorry, did you cut out?
What about you, Nathan?
Oh, okay. No, all I managed to do was get a little bit of painting in on some Bushido, a little bit of painting in on some Ralphosa, and then I played a very small game of Bushido that Terry filmed to put up on her channel because she was just like, I have a video going live tomorrow. I really need to get a game in. And I was like, okay. Gotcha. So that was it for me. But my goal this week is to actually bang out all of my Ralphosa frigates and start getting ready for Onslaught.
Right on. Yes. Onslaught. 1,200 points should be very interesting. I am planning to do my my Dindrenzi for it. So we'll see how that goes, but we'll also see what other models...
You have been planning your Dindrenzi for every Firestorm tournament this year, so we will see how that goes. Yeah. But the smart money is on you playing Omnidyne again.
Well, Omnidyne or Directorate. Because, again, I got two good-looking, very competitive fleets that I don't really have to toy with. You know, they're ready to go. They're solid and ready to go. The only thing would be is if I get very distracted with, like, Aquans, per se. Because I did pick up those boxes and I really like the models and I think I have a color scheme that I want to do, so I'm just like, shit. I don't know. As much as I love the Directorate, it's all very 50-50 right now because Firestorm Armada tends to pull me in a lot of different directions.
Yes
indeed. So yeah, there it is. All right, so let's talk about our model of the week. So model of the week is the starter box and the various expansions that we've seen so far for Planetfall, which is the new ground-based tabletop board game from Spartan Games set in the Firestorm Armada universe. So if you're not familiar with this, we do have a link posted on the Facebook group. You can check it out there. You can check it out on Spartan Games website, and they've got a whole bunch of this stuff up for pre-orders. And I mean, I was very 50-50 on this game.
I mean, I was sold.
You were sold out the gates.
Well, not out of the gates. I mean, when they first showed Terran and Dindrenzi models, I was like, you know, it doesn't look great, but we'll see. And then they announced, they're like, oh, no, we're releasing all six of the core races. Yep. And I was like, you know what, then maybe. And the first thing I saw was, like, the sleek Aquan tanks that we're going to get to talk about. And I was like, yeah, I'm in. I don't even know if I'm going to play Aquans, but I'm in. And everything that I've seen that isn't Terran and Dindrenzi, I think, is just like a 10 out of 10. They've been knocking it out of the park. And it's not that Terran and Dindrenzi are bad. They're just your very typical sci-fi, human. You know, human faction. So it's all like mech warrior shit and like your typical tanks. Like, basically, take Halo, add mech warrior. That is both of those factions. And I'm like, eh. Take it or leave it.
Yeah, the thing that really sold me was the similarities, right? It's one of those things where you look at it when they originally announced Planetfall, and they're like, hey, we got Spartan Studios doing it, and look, Taron Dendrenzi, go. And I was like, I don't know, man. Like, it just, none of it really spoke to me, and it just seemed like they just kind of gave the IP away, and they were like, yeah, just start making some stuff. But as soon as I saw we had Aquaman and Directorate in there, and then the side-by-side release is their Natural Allies, I was like, okay, so right there, for some reason, that sold me. Just the idea that they are keeping with not only, like, the theme, but, like, the tone and the rule set. So when you look at this, it's like, well, you can kind of assume you're probably going to see Natural Allies as options in this game as well, considering the way that they've released it. And it's a very smart release, especially for, like, a new game with a first starter box coming out. You know, you got your little terrain box set, which is pretty good. And it looks like, you know, pretty big, pretty nice terrain, which, you know, I'm very excited for.
Yeah, and I mean, I agree with you. I think what they're doing is very smart, because with this, we can really expect to see a Natural Ally expansion coming up with all of the releases. So when Dendrenzi get introduced, you know we're going to see a small little box of RSN. Bam. Right there. And that's why I'm just like, you know what? Fuck, this looks good. The other thing that I really like about it is the scale. This is a 10mm miniature game. For those of you that are unaware of what that is Flames of War scale.
Flames of War.
And what I love about the Flames of War scale is we're going to get to see infantry, we're going to get to see small vehicles all the way up to Leviathan-sized, you know, war constructs. You know, but being that scale, it all paints very, very, very fast.
Yes.
You know, like, you know, ask anyone that's painted Flames of War infantry and they'll tell you, you know, base coat, wash, dry brush, touch a couple details there, but there's nothing else on the models. Like, it's... There's no more detail sculpted on. So, I mean, we've got a game that's going to paint fast that Spartan is committed towards doing right, which is the exact opposite of that Spartan Studios thing.
Right.
Where it's just like, oh, yeah, it's Taron Dendrenzi. Anything else? Maybe. Maybe if it sells. Yeah, we could definitely think about doing it if it sells. But this is Spartan Games saying we're investing in it. And, you know, to me, like I said, if they're just going to release races in pairs, we can expect at least 3 straight months of Planetfall releases, which is going to, like I said, I think make the game very interesting. So yeah, I'm excited. The models sell me, and hopefully it plays well.
Right. So let's talk about the Directorate models first off. Directorate models,
there,
as you said,
there's a surprise.
Well, you know, I'm just saying. We're gonna lead up. We're gonna lead up. I'm gonna let you finish.
All right.
So the Directorate models are very interesting because they've got this very sleek, not quite as ridiculous as the new Batmobile looking aesthetic to them. They look very stealth bomberish. They look like they're kind of like, you know, sub radar style. And what we're seeing as well is that a lot of these are also going to be using a cyber warfare ECM suite type thing, which is going to be really cool. And yeah, they've just got still a very generic human, but they just look much more expensive, right? Like, they don't look like they're mass produced off the line type thing. Like, these things look like these are billions and billions of whatever the currency in the storm zone is. But they're super cool.
Orphan tears.
Yeah. I particularly like the buggies.
The buggies I think were super cool because, again, like, you know, you're seeing the tanks and you're like, yay, tanks, like nothing really special there, you know, in the infantry. But then the fact that they're just like, no way, man, like, let's Mad Max this shit up. But again, like you said,
buggies.
Yeah, but like you said, it looks expensive. Like, this is all top of the line technology.
Yeah. They also have a cyber warfare tank specifically built for cyber warfare, which is very cool. So again, they're very much keeping with the themes that we've seen. Now, keep in mind that the majority of the stuff that we are seeing on the website, as opposed to the Firestorm Armada, Spartan Games Facebook group, is all just 3D digital renders with digital paint. So we're not seeing pictures of the actual models. We're just seeing what they came up with on the computers. But they all look super, super slick. It does give you a wonderful idea of what these guys are going to look like. So let's talk about the infantry for the Directorate. Again, these guys are referred to as shock troops, and they absolutely look it. You know, fully armored, very cool-looking masks. I love it's hard to tell in the pictures because, again, this is a digital render. But the way that they kind of did the masks, where the masks kind of have this, like, glowing, computerized, holographic faceplate-looking thing. I mean, mm-hmm. It's kind of what it looks like. Either way, it looks really slick. These guys look like stormtroopers, which is super rad. It kind of makes me want to paint them white. But they are pretty damn awesome. They also have a combat carrier, which is nice, but, you know, very typical. They kept the aesthetic the whole way through, and I think it looks fantastic.
Yeah, you know, I said it to you. I feel like Directorate are the best-looking human faction. Because, again, Terrans are very typical. Halo plus Mech Warrior. Dindrenzi are really channeling that, but we're, you know, basically Terrans are short and fat. Dindrenzi are tall and skinny. Otherwise, the aesthetics are almost identical.
Yeah.
Directorate brings something fresh to it. You've got buggies. The combat carrier, you know, looks awesome. Like, I love how the front, it looks like the buggy, and then it just pulls up into, like, the back of this thing, but it's got, like, the missile pods. Like, again, everything about it just looks sleek.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so again, like, that's, that, you know, again, well done, really, is all I can say with that.
So, when we get over to the Aquans, a lot of people are saying, like, there's just wave serpents, and it's like, all right, you know what, like, you can draw the similarity there. I think that's perfectly fair. They're obviously going to be a hover race, they're going to be using beams, all that kind of stuff, but these things look really, really slick, and unlike the Directorate, where my eye is drawn to the smaller stuff, it's the opposite with the Aquan. My eye is drawn to that heavy skimmer.
Yes.
That thing is gorgeous looking. And when you kind of get on to even like their little medium skimmers and stuff, like, these are really, really slick looking models.
Yeah. And again, I mean, I even like the little recon thing, because what I find about the aesthetic here is the aesthetic of the Aquans. And remember, if you have followed the evolution of the fleet's looks through Firestorm Armada, all of the Planetfall stuff looks like that Mark III stuff. So all of that Aquan, you know, stuff that you just picked up, that you're like, oh, I really love the look of them. This is the same style of aesthetic. So yeah, there are similarities to Eldar. Because, you know, I guess Games Workshop was the only people to say, you know, rounded corners and hover tanks. Like, obviously everything else
on organic looking shit and crystals.
Right? you know, so I expect a cease and desist any day now. Yeah. Really. You can't get past it. But like I said, it just, like, I really like it because it's still able to keep that aquatic feel. For me, I think my favorite is that medium designator skimmer. I just love it. I love the profile. I love how it kind of, like, bulks up in the middle. You know, still got crystals all over the place. And again, for me, the infantry are a little bit unexpected, because what I love about this is, yeah, we've talked about Aquans are fish people, Relthos are spiders, Cerulean's are lizards, but we have never actually seen what they look like. And that's why when I, you know, it's just like you see them and you're like, they're okay. I don't think they're nearly as good as the Directorate ones, but I'm just... The part of me that's just like, I wonder what these fish people look like, was just like, bam, you know what? That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it stands out as being pretty rad the way that they designed them. And one of the things to point out about the Aquans is their species is essentially a conglomerate of a bunch of different aquatic species. Like, they have crab people, and they've got these very lithe, tall fish people, and they've got these different types of, like, castes of... you know, warrior cast and pilot cast and stuff like that. So this, what we're seeing here is this ground troop warrior cast, not necessarily their assault troops or their shock troops. So, I mean, fingers crossed, we might still see some crab heavy infantry sometime in the future, but very cool looking. I really like the look of the weapons that they're holding. I think they did a good job with that.
Yes.
And I think just the kind of top heavy bulk of them, you know, that if you look at the models, the top down on the models, you can't really see it on the colored ones, but the top down ones, they've got that hard shell carapace on the back. Looks really cool. So I think these guys would look fantastic on the table.
Yes, but, you know, put some paint on them. And that's really what I'm looking to do, is I'm just like, man, you know, I can't wait to get my hands on it. Can't wait to put some paint on it. You know, so I mean, like, that's that. That's what we're getting out of a starter box, which is super cool, really interesting. You know, but beyond that, like we were talking about, the natural allies for both of these boxes are getting day one launches as well. So Lang started with Directorate. I'll let him finish with Works Raptor. Like, let's talk about the Turquoise. I mean, what we're seeing here is a super cool looking ship which again is matching the aesthetic of the fleet, right? So, I mean, it doesn't look Aquan, and yet it still looks kind of fish people, because the Turquoise are just another fish person race as part of the larger Aquan alliance. But then the, you know, what I think is super cool about this, and I can't wait to get the rules for it. So it's just like you got this big, bad, heavy looking flyer, but it drops those two little portally looking things. And that's where all of those drones teleport in. So I'm like, I have no idea what any of this shit does in the game, but I love the idea of this fucking strafing flyer doing bombing runs, because it is a heavy gunship, and dropping these teleportation nodes. I just think conceptually cool as fuck.
Well, what's also really rad, I particularly like their infantry. I love the idea of just these little, weak little fishy people in these, like, mechanized suits.
Yeah, right.
Stomping around, you know, these kind of awkward-looking mechanized suits stomping around the battlefield. What I particularly like about the expansions from what we're seeing right now is that what they're showing us is that, you know, in both of these expansions is where you're getting your flyers. Like, we can expect that we will see Directorate-specific flyers and, you know, Aquan-specific flyers. But right now, what we're seeing is they're just like, you know what, allies, this is what these guys are going to bring. This is why you want them. It's going to add the flyer aspect to the game. Sorry, I do take it back. If you do kind of scroll to the right on each of the pictures on the website, they do show the actual model. If you kind of want to get an idea of what the model itself looks like just in resin. But really, really nice looking stuff. And yeah, that flyer is super slick, and it very much does match the aesthetic of the Aquans, which works very, very well.
So, works Raptor.
Tron, motherfucker. No, you know what? I absolutely love it. The tanks, the recon tanks, look so damn cool. It's Tron. That's all I can think of is Tron, and it looks freaking amazing. Instead of getting a heavy gunship, you get some interceptors, so we can expect that these are very similar to what interceptors would look like for Works Raptor in space, right? This is a very, very cool box set, because it's very different from the Turquoise box set, which is focused on infantry and a heavy flyer. This is much lighter with more recon tanks and stuff like that. And man, oh man, the digital color looks amazing on these.
Yeah, it really does.
But even the models themselves look really, really slick and very straightforward. So like you say, these are going to paint in a freaking snap. And man, I can't wait to get my hands on them. That's the truth right there.
Yeah, and you know what? And I think that's what's telling about good models. Because again, like, I was sold on the digital renders. You didn't really see anything that really caught your eye. Because again, they were just teasing, right? They're like, look at Aquan tanks. Look at this one render of Cerulean infantry. But actually getting to see like a whole assortment and really get an idea for the aesthetic, like, you know, as soon as this popped up, I showed you, you're like, man, I'm sold. Like, let's price out what every one of these will cost us.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that was exactly it, because again, unlike Games Workshop, you and I can both get into this for under $300.
Oh yeah.
If we bought one of everything on that page, the rule book, the starter kit with the rule book, the terrain box, and the two allied contingents, it's still under $300.
That is under $300, and we both have, again, we don't know how large a force, but we both have what I would assume is a very good start to a force.
Right.
You know, and since this game is new, as people are getting in, you know they're going to get whatever their patrol fleet box equivalent is going to be.
Exactly.
Plus their allied whatever.
Well, it's step one and step two, right?
Yeah, absolutely, because like once everything out of there is out, then we're going to get to see them really stretch their legs. Because again, this is what we saw with Firestorm Armada when the game was released. We saw them come out with these patrol fleet boxes, which was battleship, cruiser squad, frigate squad, right?
Yeah.
And then they're just like, hey, everybody, we've introduced carriers. Aren't carriers neat? And then it was like 6 months later, they're like, holy shit, guys, check out these R&D options. Yeah. You know, so as you said, I'm expecting the same sort of thing with Planetfall. But what just makes me so excited for this game beyond that is the fact that they're just straight up saying natural allies are in. So, I mean, we can expect to see Alliance and Xenian League getting eventually flushed out to be fully playable the way they are in Firestorm. And that just excites me, because it tells me that the people in charge of making this game are fans of the universe, and they want to make sure that if you play a fleet in Firestorm, you can play a force in Planetfall.
There you go. All right, so let's move on to the weekly list. question that we have for you guys was, which do you prefer, Sisters of Battle, Death Watch, or Grey Knights? Which arm of the Inquisition, which militant arm are you most a fan of? And by a narrow victory, Sisters of Battle won it. You would think Games Workshop would be aware of this. Apparently they are not. Death Watch was two votes behind with about 41% of the vote, and Grey Knights get a paltry seven votes, 14% of the vote. You know, and what it really comes down to here is exactly what we talked about in the previous episode. The army has just gotten to the point where you just don't feel like it's special anymore. You know, you don't feel like there's anything there that really, that you find interesting or that, you know, excites you. It's just a lot of people look at Grey Knights and they're like, yeah, it's Grey Knights. We've been dealing with them for years now. Right. And it does kind of fall off. Whereas you have Death Watch, which are kind of this weird, cool cream of the crop entity of Space Marines, where it's like, ah, oh, it's everything you like about Space Marines. And the reason why I like it and the reason why I still pick it over the other two is because, you know, say what you will about other chapters, right? I don't like Space Wolves. I don't like Blood Angels, but there are still cool things about both Space Wolves and Blood Angels. I'll be the first to admit it. Right.
Well, so, Space Wolves, sure.
But like, wait, I think every chapter has something going for it. And when you just get to pick and choose what you want and just be like, yeah, this guy's a Space Wolf, this guy's a White Scar, I think that that's a lot of fun. I think that you can have a good time with it. And but really, it's no surprise that Sisters of Battle won this one.
No, it really isn't. And that's why, like you said, this can't be a surprise to Games Workshop. Like, why do they keep just kicking this army while it's down? You know, because again, like I think you nailed it on the head. Grey Knights would have probably been near the top if they didn't have their own codex, where people are just been like, oh yeah, they're Grey Knights, hooray. You know, Death Watch really are the embodiment of it. And what is cool is the fact that not only are Death Watch created from the cream of the crop of all these different chapters, but after however many years their term is, they go back to their chapters. And that's the whole point of it, is just like, no, you're on loan. You know, it's like a fucking work experience program for the best of the best Space Marines. So it's just like, hey, all you do is kill fucking aliens running around.
Saved Ultramar. You're going to camp.
Right?
We're sending you on a retreat. Yeah, I think it's absolutely the case, and it's a lot of fun. So we had some comments here. Adam says, racism and loopy moon men, please. Penitent Engines are able to make the last Matrix movie make sense, and Exorcist, because why the fuck not? So I'm assuming he voted for Sisters of Battle. And I think, yeah, Sisters of Battle are so off the wall different that really is what also sets them apart.
Well, and that's the thing, is like, from an aesthetic perspective, they are unique to 40K. Nothing looks even remotely like them. I mean, we have how many different renditions of power armor, and Games Workshop can do is just like power armor with wolf tails, power armor with blood drops, power armor with bathrobes. But like, Sisters are unique, and then they get Exorcists, and they get Penitent Engines, and they get Arcoflagellants, and they get all of these extra cool shit that just makes them look extra grimdark, and it's so cool. Bueller. Either Lang is gone or Lang wandered away. Or Skype.
I think my cord just unhooked here.
Oh, okay. That's why I'm like, yes, it's not a hello?
Let's get back to the comments.
All right.
PeopleLed209 said, it must be noted that the all run of this report is not realistic expectation for this report. After discussing this with John Boddy, it is understood that the all selection will take a good amount of time to run, because as of this time, there are over 6 million lines of data the select is trying to count based on distinct IDs. This is also something the clients would most likely never run anyway.
And it is clear that Evil Ed was typing his work email into the comments. And we love you for it, Ed. We love you.
Somebody copied and pasted from the wrong email. Fantastic. Andrew says, it's a toss-up between Death Watch and Sisters for me. Sisters get my vote because they are their own thing, not just the greatest hits of Space Marine chapters. But hey, to each their own. All right, thanks to everyone who voted on this week's listener poll. We will have another one of those at the end of the show, of course, if we remember. So, let's move on to part two of our Grey Knights review. List building, tactics, competition, things of that nature. Yeah. So we have an interesting comment, and I want to bring this comment up because I think it's absolutely worth reading, because I would like to reply to it.
But reply to it in such a way that he himself, the original poster, cannot reply to us again.
Well, he could reply to the reply and I would see it. Like, if he replied to his own post. But whatever, I'm not trying to start a dialogue here. He says, I realize this is a second comment, but I wanted to make sure that this point would stand out. You described the Grey Knights Codex as half-assed. Well, I'm sorry to say that I felt your review was also has half-assed. I've been waiting for the Grey Knights Codex to be released prior to finally getting my own 40K Space Marine army. I like the fluff behind the Grey Knights, and I am a demoted by them. However, I want to know how they play under their new rules. You guys have great knowledge, so on and so forth. He's actually a nice guy. He's not trying to be a dick, so don't think that's the case. It was half-assed because we felt the book was half-assed. And that's really what it came down to.
Yeah.
When we look at this book and any of the interesting stuff is cut out and it's just guys in silver armor with some silly options, but otherwise just Space Marines amped up to the nines, it falls off. And there was an opportunity there, like we said in the previous episode, there was an opportunity there to maybe add something or do something. Now, you said that they would also inevitably fuck that up because what we got before when they did that was the Baby Bjorn.
Again, how I feel. No, but I mean, like, yes, it was half-assed, but I mean, like, it wasn't even like we had planned it to be that. It's just like we were what, the third unit entry in, and we were repeating the exact same things of nothing has changed.
These psychic powers are chosen for you.
And they have these psychic powers. But, like, that's it. That's all. We were not able to say anything new. And after three, that was when even you were sick of it because you recognized we had 10 more pages of it. With that being said, I think that the book can build interesting lists, as we're going to get to, although I suspect Lang and I do have some duplication in them.
Unlikely.
Very, very likely, since it's not like the book has very many options.
Not a lot of options.
For elites, do you want the really shitty power-armored ones, or do you want the amazing-as-fuck paladins?
What it really comes down to in this is that you've got a couple of options, and the options are all good, but those options stand out, and so most lists are going to take advantage of them with a couple of things traded out here and there. Now, we built our list to 1850, which is what is played locally here. And to kind of get back to what Stefan was saying here, you know, let me give you a bit of perspective on how Nathan and I do this shit. If we're excited about something, as you can tell, we were talking about Planetfall there, we can talk about it. Man, we can talk about it. But if we're not excited about it, we're not going to force it. Like, we're not going to force it out and just be like, all right, guys, page 37, Strike Squad, they are equipped with. Like, there's no love there. And if we're not excited about something, you can expect that's kind of what you're going to end up getting. It's not the first time we've had a codex come through and we're just like, you know. But usually in those cases, there's at least enough to talk about in there. Changes to the rules, like even when the orcs were there. Changes to the rules that were interesting that we wanted to talk about. You know, how the lists would work. You know, how this would work if we change this. How it would work with the new psychic phase for 7th edition. In this case, it's just, you know, it's a lot of the same old stuff. So anyways, there's that. I appreciate the comment because, you know, yes, it was half-assed, but I don't apologize for it, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Well, that's because usually when we run retractions, we follow it with a fuck you. Oh, so, yeah. Of course, there are no apologies.
Oh, there was more than enough of that. I think at least three or four people posted Jada Gamer corrections on here about Sanctuary extra grants of 4++ saving characters don't automatically come with precision in 7th edition anymore. Nathan. So there's our Jada Gamer.
Oh my god, you're right. So now I need to go change it and take that three-shot bolter.
Take that three-shot bolter.
That three-shot bolter is going to be fucking money in the bank now.
Why would you not want that? All right. There it is. That's what you got. So, okay, let's dive into the list building here. I'll start because my list is small. So.
Oh, you think you are going to be the only one? But well, go on.
Here's the thing, okay. Right?
First of all, my question is, like, and I'm not even trying to interrupt you, but I think that this is valid for any 7th edition list building conversations. What Force Org are you using?
I'm using the standard Force Org with the
standard rules. 2 troops.
That's correct. Because I'm not using Deep Strike.
Okay.
There you go. So, in my mind, this army, the Grey Knights, the way that I would play them, the way that I like to play them, is big bang for your buck, and then that's it, right? Like, no frills, no nothing, just boom, 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 and literally that's it, because I have four squads.
Wow. All right, let's do it.
I have two strike squads in Razorbacks. I have two five-man Paladin squads in Land Raider Redeemers. Jesus. And a Brother Captain.
And that's your 1850?
That is my 1850. The Brother Captain has the Creative Sacrifice. Strike squads have Psy Cannons, Razorbacks, or Last Plas. Land Raider Redeemers are stock. The Paladins have one of each type of banner. One of the squads is actually a squad of six, because the five-man squad will have the Brother Captain with it. And yeah, and then that's what I'm doing. Just big, huge stuff on the table. And when these guys show up, I'm just blazing up in your face, right? Like, I want to try to get in and go for it. All of my Paladins have one Psy Cannon in the squad, and they all have the Halberds, the Force Halberds, Nemesis Force Halberds. And the Strike Squads all have Psy Cannons, and they're otherwise stock. And that's basically the way that I went with it. I feel like I don't really need to go hardcore with everything else. Now, I mean, it could be argued that what I can do is just lose the Paladin squad and take two flyers, right? Or take a flyer and take some of the fucking baby Bjorns. But I don't feel that, right? Like, that doesn't speak to me at all. Like, I don't sit there and go, well, yeah, I need to have this in my list. Like, I understand that I'm going to have a hard time with flyers. Fine. I got it, right?
Yeah.
I deal with that. I'm okay with that. You know, in the games where I'm not having to deal with flyers, fine. But for the most part, like, I don't feel like I can build this list as it stands right now to be fun, that I would really like to play, that goes, okay, now I'm going to build it to take all comers and make sure I've got enough anti-air and I'm using fortifications and I'm using this and I'm using that, because none of that appeals to me. Like, that's the opposite of how I feel this particular codex should be played, like how Grey Knights should be played. They should be the elite, like, just up there, in your face, fearless, just go balls to the wall. And that's the only way I can even, like, visualize an army for these guys. When I first started putting the list together, my focus was like, okay, so, all right, I'm going to do a whole bunch of strike squads with deep strike, 10-man strike squads, three of them deep striking, and then I'm going to do paladins, but the paladins have to be going here, and then they got to do this. But I don't know if I want to do, okay, well, maybe I should just take more strike squads. And it just, none of it, I didn't like any of it, you know? As soon as I started trying to, like, math hammer all the best options, it fell off for me. I lost interest. So this is what I would play if I was going to play Grey Knights.
See, it's interesting, because I would never, ever play that. No, I mean, you are right. It is small. And at the end of the day, with your two Land Raiders on there, basically what it comes down to, like you said, you're not going to be able to deal with flyers. Big deal. My list can't deal with flyers. I feel like Grey Knights lack good Skyfire, since they lack any Skyfire. I mean, really, I guess they're on footing with all Inquisition armies. Sisters have no Skyfire, right. So fair's fair.
Well, again, this is why I double down, right? I got to double down on Paladins and Redeemers.
And even then, you know, the Storm Raven at 205 points, not great. I feel like if you were going to try to build a take all comers out of Grey Knights, allies are a necessity. Just take a Imperial Guard ally, grab some Hydra Flak tanks, grab a platoon to just camp objectives. Bob's your uncle. Like, really, that's what it comes down to. Is you are going to take an allied contingent. Mm-hmm. It's probably going to be guard. You'll get the most bang for your buck. You could take Space Marines. I just don't feel like you would be as happy with them as you would with, like, a three-man Hydra Flak tank squad.
The star of the show is the Grey Knights. And so there's no reason to take Space Marines when you can get cheaper additions that fill out your list out of Imperial Guard. Or shit, even like Eldar if you wanted to.
Militarum Tempestus, take Stormtroopers.
Any number of things work
totally with
this. So.
Okay, so I mean, I for one went pretty much the exact opposite. Again, you have to remember, I'm a jaded old fuck, so there are no allies, there are no Lords of War, there are no fortifications, there's none of that bullshit in my list. And I also didn't take the Storm Raven, because I've played a Storm Raven in my Marine army, And I don't know, they either have, in my opinion, they have two games. One where they do absolutely fucking nothing and get shot out of the sky, and one where they do nothing, but they're still around at the end of the game. So you're like, what's the point?
Mm.
Like, they're, you know, this is not a great flyer. Like, it's not one of, like, the it's not a fucking Crimson Hunter out of the Eldar Codex that's making bank. Right. It's not, you know, any of the other really great flyers, like Night Scythes out of the Necron book. So why bother? I didn't. So my list is, I have a Brother Captain with the Cuirass of Sacrifice and Digital Weapons, which was my 10-point I have nothing else to buy upgrade. Hey, at least I'm calling it how it is.
I've been there. I'd have taken Melta Bombs, but hey, whatever.
Yeah, but then I'd have 5 points. I mean, at least with Digi Weapons, I get to reroll that one to wound, because with Hammer Hand, I should be wounding everything on twos.
Yeah.
You know, so like I said, I think what's telling, we both took the Cuirass of Sacrifice, because even as we said last week, it is hands down the best item in the whole list. And the other thing is, it also says when you're choosing it, you know, there's only one of each item, and then a character may choose one of the following, because I really wanted to take the weapon one that we were talking about,
the
Soul Glaive.
Yes.
As well, but when push came to shove and I had to choose between super survivable and a little bit more offense in combat, fuck it. You know, survivability wins every time.
He's already slugging it out. I don't feel like...
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Also, one thing to note, I am taking the Nemesis Strike Force. You know, I'm looking at it because...
I knew that was coming.
Well, yeah, because even as I said last week, where I was like, this is the only one that where I would move away from it, and the biggest reason is 1 HQ, 1 troops, and hell, in 5th edition, I played an entire deep strike, drop, you know, reserve bomb, Tyranid army, so guess what kind of Granite army I built? That exact thing. Yeah. So, my 1 troops, meeting my compulsory, is a 10-man Terminator squad with 2 side cannons. They are going to deep strike in, and odds are they're going to combat squad, because fuck them, I don't really care about them that much, and it lets me split up the 2 side cannons, shoot at different targets. That's the biggest reason for it. So, 1 reserve roll, lets me get 2 squads in, hell yes. I then have a 10-man paladin squad with an apothecary, with the Nemesis banner, and with 4 psi cannons in it.
There you go. Yeah, mine have apothecaries as well, by the way.
Well, fuck, feel no pain. Why the fuck wouldn't you?
The hell wouldn't you take that? Anyways.
So like I said, I mean, this is the uber points thing. Like, out of 1,850 points, it is more than a third of my entire army.
Oh, yeah.
Tipping the scales at 685. But at the end of the day, I just don't care. I will never combat squad this unit so that they all get the apothecary.
Yep.
It means that I have 4 psi cannons that are going to point at pretty much anything I want to fuck up. And I'm going to do it because with, 4 of them, that's 16 strength 7 AP4 rending shots going in. So, I mean, like, this is what's going to be clearing out all but the heaviest of tanks for me. Like, Land Raiders, right. I'm not going to shoot at. I mean, in your list, I would, because what else is there, to shoot at?
Yeah, that's exactly it, right? Like, if I'm doing nothing but forcing you to shoot at Land Raiders, I can deal with it. And then even if the Land Raider goes or is immobilized or some shit happens to it, it's just like, meh, whatever. My guys get out. They continue to truck up the table towards you.
Well, and exactly. So, I mean, like, that's a scary 20-wound unit. I love it. I think, even though it is 685, worth it. I could not imagine building a Granite list without a squad of Paladins.
Yes.
They, too, are going to deep strike, and the Brother Captain would probably go with the Paladins because, hey, why not put all eggs in one basket?
So I will also point out that my Brother Captain, I'm taking Divination.
Oh, interesting. I'm keeping everything with Sanctic Demonology because, as I said when we did 7th, I feel it is the best lore in the game.
Yep.
So I see no reason to...
No surprise there. I think for me, it's all about bang for the buck. I've got psychic powers all over the table, everywhere else, doing essentially the meat and potatoes, you know, out of that sanctic lore. I don't feel like I need to go hard on anything other than that, you know? So Hammerhand and, you know, Sanctuary and all that kind of stuff, bing, bang, boom, it's firing off. That's what it does. But I think for him, absolutely, I love the idea of just being able to say, ah, you know what? Boom, Divination, you know, Primaris, I can't remember what it's called, but, you know, I think that they just work very, very well for this list. And as we said, divination, if you have to go from the rule book disciplines, is the best one. That's the one that you want.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I don't feel like I need another Psyker with Sanctic on the table. I feel like divination is actually going to add more to
Well, really what I'm hoping to pull, because, I mean, I have Hammerhand on everything. That's what we talked about. You have Banishment, you have Hammerhand, which is great. So what I'm really hoping to get is Gate of Infinity, so I can start trucking around my paladins anywhere they need to go by just being like, oh, I remove them, they deep strike. Now, keep in mind, even though I do get, you know, mini battle focus when I come out of deep strike, it does specifically say deep strike reserve, so you don't get to battle focus when you Gate of Infinity around the board.
Right.
FYI. But the other thing that I'm hoping to get is Vortex of Doom, because if I'm able to just come down, run, throw my strength D AP 1 fucking vortex, and then hose something with all of the psi cannons, shit's dying, and I love it. So anyway, after that, I have two Nemesis Dread Knights maxing out my heavy support, both with personal teleporters and both with heavy incinerators.
Mm-hmm.
Also known as the fuck you Tau'dar weapons of strength 6 AP 4 torrent. Love it. And then I'm just bringing it home. I have a 10-man interceptor squad with two incinerators. Now, I don't upgrade anyone because I feel like the Nemesis Force Sword plus Hammerhand is the absolute best close combat weapons you can get. You know, and when I look at this list, I'm going to be relying on the two Dread Knights to really be dealing with Armor 14. Monoliths, although who plays those anymore? I mean, seriously, have you seen a monolith since the new book dropped?
I've seen a couple in boxes for the guys who really wanted the Catan shard.
Hey, holy, the big one, the super big one. You know, but dealing with monoliths, dealing with land raiders, things of that nature, I just want my dread knights to get up there and go punchy punchy.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I'm going to deal with big heavy armor values. The incinerators will get the job done, because basically the way I would play this list is the interceptors will start on the board, because I do not want to auto lose because I roll really terrible reserve rolls for one turn. Because, I mean, the list itself is five reserve rolls if I reserve everything. If I roll five ones and twos, I lose the game.
You should just buy a tech marine.
To put somewhere.
To just put them in a place.
Bolster. No, but like I said, my thinking is the interceptor squad deploys on the board and just hides. I mean, it's 10 marines split into two combat squads if there isn't a big enough piece of terrain for me to keep 10 mm-hmm. marines out of line of sight. That's their whole job, is be there in case my dice fuck me on turn one and I get no reserve rolls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once reserves come in, the interceptors pull their personal teleporter to move 30 inches up the board. Bam. Suddenly they're where I want them to be. And that's why I wanted that squad in particular, is as my insurance. Because, yeah, I could have taken a strike squad. They're a little bit cheaper, you know, and they could just hide out. But the fact that with the interceptors as personal teleporters, it gives me that once per game 30-inch, like, shunt them into position style movement. But yeah, I mean, like, that's the list. It's super small. It is a reserve bomb style list. I have one unit starting on the board and they're hiding, like fucking hiding. And if you have indirect, I'm just like fucking going to ground anytime you shoot me.
Right.
Like, I don't give a fuck. They have one job and it's not to die. After that, every single thing in my army has a 2+ armor save.
Yeah, there you go.
And that's what I love about it, is the Terminators are coming down. They're going to battle focus into a better position if they need to. The Paladins are coming down. The Dread Knights are coming down. And it really is just designed for me to basically pick a spot where I want it to go, where all of these reserves are going to come down and go nuts. Although I think I might be able to swap the Interceptors for... Oh, no. Great Knights don't have drop pods. Never mind.
Mm.
Because I was going to say, a drop pod with a teleport homer might do wonders.
Grey Knights do not have that technology.
Well, you know, they're too busy on Titan, mm-hmm. I don't know, doing whatever Grey Knights do. But yeah, the other thing that I did
point out... each other up.
Right?
Talking about sisters.
And right? murdering them and bathing in their blood, because that's totally for the Emperor. Oh, Matt Ward, your fluff will never be missed. But as I pointed out... What I like about my list is, A, I could see me playing this list because, again, this is the only army that has come out to date that can play that sort of reserve bomb, unpredictable, you know, come down all at once. Sorry?
I said unpredictable indeed. You know, it's funny you were just like, oh, I'd never play that list. And again, mine is, I'm betting everything on black, right? Like, this is roulette.
Come on, double zero.
That is it, right? On a great day, three games in a row, three blacks, I'm rolling the table, right? But it's one of those things where, you know, the all deep strike list is just as chintzy, where it's like, yeah, if you come out and you bomb and everything comes down, exactly, you're deep striking the muff, or what do we say it was? Deep striking the clump. If you're deep striking the clump, just going hard, it's perfect, and like, you will love everything about that list, right? But if your stuff's kind of coming out piecemeal,
or when those paladins mishap and are destroyed,
something goes wrong and you're just like, god fucking damn it, and then you're just like, oh well, that's just part of how this list plays. It's the same with mine, right? Like, it's the exact same thing where it's just like, yeah, if I go up against an anti-armor list, they're probably going to chew me up a little bit. But hey, if I can get at least one of those land raiders in there, and one of those squads of paladins in there, I'll feel like I've won.
Right. Regardless of how this shit goes down.
That's right. Just I don't care. Getting
there. No, I agree. And like I said, I have played all reserve, you know, deep strike, unpredictable lists before, and you're absolutely, that is exactly how it works. When everything goes your way, it's almost impossible to lose. But you know, as I was saying, I could see myself building this list. I think it would be a lot of fun to play for a while, and I think that's inherently the problem. And on the plus side, this entire list is $473 for an 1850-point list, which is, I believe, exactly half the cost of any other 1850 point list that you could ever build, unless it's Imperial Knights.
Mine is right around there as well.
Well, you know, but again, like you said, it's retardedly expensive fucking Marines. And, you know, when that's what you're dealing with, that's what you're dealing with. No, I like it. But going back to that point that I was talking about, whereas like, you will get bored, I feel like you will get bored is the slogan of the Grey Knights book in general, because even if we go back, like, let's really go back, and I'm just going to look at the profile page because fuck trying to flip through everything. You have three generic HQ choices, one of whom is the champion who's only good in combat.
That's right.
One's a librarian, and one's your jack of all trades. So you do not have a lot of options. And then you have basically named versions of all of them. You have two troops choices. Do you want Terminators or do you want Marines? Period. Elites, you have Paladins, you have Purifiers, and you have Dreadnoughts. There is nothing else. Fast attack, you have Interceptors, you have a Storm Raven. Heavy support, you have the Dreadnought, the Dread Knight, you have all three of your Land Raider variants, and you have a Purgator squad. But that's it. And it's just like, you look at how limited this entire book is, and it's just like, you will get bored. Yeah, I mean, I could build this list, and I could probably play 10, 20 games with it and have fun. But I will get to the point where I am just so sick and tired of the playstyle, but there is nothing else available to me. And I think that is the biggest failure of this book, and a bigger failure than the Space Wolves book. A bigger failure than even, I'm going to say it, the Guard book or the Tyranids book, is at the end of the day, this book is so limited on options that once you are done building the list that you want, there's nothing else.
Hey, as we said,
nothing else.
Codex Cadia is a great Codex Cadia.
You know, it's a fantastic Codex Cadia with mountains of options.
Listen, it's a phenomenal Codex Cadia, but as an Imperial Guard book, that's where we just go like, ah, why did you miss so much? You know, we go back to traits, we go back to all that stuff.
Yeah, and you know what? I agree with Codex Cadia. You know what? You're right. It doesn't apply.
Because it was great list. We both, like, loved our lists out of that book.
You know, that is a good point. But even then, where do we have rules going from for unit entries? Page 60... all the way until page 81. So there are 21 different entries, of which like 7 of them RHQ.
Or duplicates.
Or duplicates.
Marines with an antenna on their back. Well,
and that's exactly it. It's like, let's really break it down. Troops, you have Marines with Force Swords and Storm Bolters, or you have Terminators with Force Swords and Storm Bolters. Let's look at Elites. You have Marines with Force Swords and Storm Bolters, or you have Paladins with Force Swords and Storm Bolters. Oh, and a Dreadnought.
But just, Nathan, which psychic powers do they have? Yeah, we get it.
Exact same. But I mean, yeah. And I think that's my only problem with this book. If you are a huge fan of Grey Knights, that may be enough to keep you past the honeymoon phase when you're just like, fuck my list. You know, because this book cannot take all comers. You cannot play pure Grey Knights if you're going to a tournament.
Right.
Period. You can't deal with flyers. You cannot deal with armor 14 without getting up close and punching it. Those are both very unreliable strategies.
Right. So here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first book in terms of the way that it's structured and the way that it plays and the way that you kind of are forced to use it as allies. This is the first book for Warhammer 40,000, the Codex that's come out, that I would say really only look at this book as allies, right?
You know,
if you're really looking at this book, look at a different army. Look at Space Marines, look at Imperial Guard, look at something else and go, you know what? Can I take some Paladins in here? You know, can I take some Nemesis Dreadknights in here? You know, how do I fit this into my existing army? Because I would not tell anyone to go out and start a Grey Knights army. But as we said, Paladins are fucking amazing. The characters are very good. You know, you've got some cool options here, but trying to make a whole army out of just that, you always end up going, like you said, well, yeah, you got to mix some Guard in, or you got to mix this in. My big thing is like, well, no, go the opposite end. Play that army. Play Codex Cadia. And take a 10-man squad of Paladins and drop them on the table and just be like, 400 points, motherfucker. And just go.
You know, but see, here's the interesting thing. I feel like you hit it on, you completely hit it out of the park.
Yeah. I am super erect right now that you're right? saying that.
I know, right? Grey Knights are an allies book because even when you look at like, but like for me, I'm only disagreeing on do they have to be the allied detachment? Maybe not. Because even when you look at their Grey Knight specific force org, it has the same minimums of an allied detachment, right. One HQ, one troops. So the reason I say, does it have to be your allied? No, because you may actually want the ability to battle focus and get reserves on turn one. And if you could build a really smart guard army, and trust me, you can, using your allied detachment of one HQ, two troops, one elite, one fast, one heavy, with how expensive Grey Knights are, you could actually build a really good fucking army that is going to, regardless of how you choose to organize it, because really, that decision comes down to, do you want objectives secured for whomever is your other
right.
with your Grey Knights, or do you want your Grey Knights to be able to come out of reserve on turn one and battle focus on their deep strike?
Well, there you go. And again, that's both points, though, right? Like, that's the list you built versus the list I built.
Well, no, and that's exactly it. Because, like, the list you built, you have to drop one Paladin squad in the Land Raider because you can only have one Elite.
Yep.
You drop one Strike squad, and then you take all of those probably 800 points-ish,
yep.
maybe a bit more.
It is 820 points.
There you go. So you take that 820 points, and then you buy whatever else you want. Because remember, 40K doesn't care. Come the apocalypse, sure, take them. It doesn't matter. So then you take 820 points of whatever you want as a combined arms detachment, and you laugh your way to the bank. Me, on the other hand, I would probably just take Brother Captain Terminator Paladin and maybe a Dread Knight. And then just take cheap Company Command Squad, cheap veteran squad, Hydra flak tanks, elites of some, maybe a fast attack, being, you know, Hellhound squadron.
Sentinels with plas.
What?
Sentinels with plasma cannons.
Sentinels with plasma cannons, or if I'm really worried about armor 14, I would take the three Melta Hellhound variants.
There you go.
I can't remember which ones they are.
Blazehounds.
The Blazer Hounds. No, I know that's not even right.
That's not even close. And I know the joke you were going for, but
right?
you did not set that up correctly.
That is correct, because I never said the Blade Hounds and then
That's
the
right.
Blazer Hounds.
No, the Blade Hounds, the Laser Hounds, and then the Blazer Hounds. Come
it's
on,
true.
Dude. How many
Oh, I
times
know.
have you seen Dodgeball? Not enough. Not enough.
That's the end. Yeah, but no matter what number anyone worldwide says to that question, the answer of not enough applies. But you know what?
My
I
daughter
think...
loves that movie. I've seen it so many times. We have it on.
Not enough. Not enough.
We own it, and she's always just like, I want to watch Dodgeball. And, you know, like, she's getting old enough now that, like, a lot of the humor is just not necessarily appropriate for her. But for the most part, she's just like, she just loves the movie.
Listen,
it's hilarious to
the
her.
Moment she actually catches the joke about Justin Long cleaning the dude's tires is the moment you're like, no more Dodgeball, sweetie.
It's too late. I think it's too late, so.
But no, like I said, I think that's exactly the point. Could you play Grey Knights on their own? Yes, but they're going to be boring. They're going to be incomplete. This is the first codex that Games Workshop released with the entire understanding of you will take them as allies, and maybe that's why they didn't release anything new for them. Is
Maybe.
Their whole idea was Grey Knights are allies.
Or they just half-assed it.
Or they just half-assed it.
Yeah, for me, like I said, if I were to take my guard and really go crazy with it, you know, I would take that Xenos Inquisitor with the rad grenades, you know, and then take that squad of Grey Knights in there. If I was, again, if I'm trying to draw that connection, then, like, how I would make that work, right? But in the end, would I ever actually do it? No. No, I don't fucking care. I think there's more than enough in Codex Cadia to make me happy. I don't feel like I need more out of Codex Cadia. And the same thing with Space Marines. It just, I'm not looking at my either of those two armies going like, oh my god, you know what I'm lacking? Paladins. Because I look at that and I'm just like, yeah, but for the cost of all these paladins, I could take Terminators and I could take some other stuff on top of it.
Listen, for the cost of that one 10-man unit of paladins, I could take for my Iron Hands, I could take a 10-man Terminator squad with a pair of assault cannons and a pair of chain fists, because cover your bases. And since almost every tournament locally allows Forge World, I could then add a Spartan Assault Tank, which could then carry all 10 of them. And that's the same cost. And you're like, well, I don't see any reason to take the Paladins over what is currently available to me.
Right.
And I think maybe that, like I said, that's the thing. Like, I think that's the big failure of that book. And maybe it's because I'm still thinking very 5th edition, 6th edition, and saying... this codex should be able to stand alone, which I guess is more of a thinking very 4th edition, 5th edition. But that to me is why I feel it is half-assed and lazy. But maybe you're right. Maybe they're just like, no, it's for allies. Fuck them. If you want to play pure Grey Knights, you're going to suffer.
Well, yeah. And I mean, maybe. Like I said, I don't think that they... if we just ignore Skyfire... and we go, okay, I want to build a balance list that can deal with all comers. It's got anti-infantry. It's got anti-air. Or not anti-air, anti-armor. And I've got some tough characters that can get in there and muss it up a little bit. You know, I can deep strike the clump, as you've so eloquently put it.
Uh-huh.
You're like, yeah, you've got my attention. I feel like it is one of those things where, sure, you could make something that you feel very comfortable with. But, you know, I think that... you're going to be looking at, you know, other options. I think you're always going to be looking at other options with this particular codex. And this is the first one where I really don't feel nearly as comfortable as a standalone list as with other ones, right? And
yeah.
I think we both agree on that. I think most people tend to agree on that. And I think if, you know, as we get on to, you know, big events and stuff like that, lists, you know, the big tournament winning lists are going to be, again, as we've seen, all of those ally mixes. What it'll be like, Gradar, Gadar.
Gadar. Let's go Gadar.
Let's go Gadar. Yeah. Get that hardcore Gadar list. Deep striking the plump. Sodomy. All right. So. Okay. God damn it. All right. Hey, something shiny.
Really?
Doctor Who follow-up.
Very. I've already downloaded it for this week because yes. I've heard from people it is good.
It is good. It is like it is good and it's mm-hmm. good and then it ends. It like that episode blue balls you hard. And it's interesting is what like saves it is the fact that by the when you get to the end of it you're just like, "Huh, was it really?" And that's kind of where they kind of leave you. And it's interesting because of the way that they kind of twist things. But the ending is very forced and you kind of are just like, oh, okay, I guess so. And the time travel aspect is wonky even for Doctor Who. But it is cool and it's very well done and it's creepy and it's absolutely fun. And the Doctor lays the hammer down a couple of times and you're just like, man, I love Capaldi. Dude takes mm-hmm. no shit. So yeah, it was good. I liked it. So you should absolutely watch it. As long as you never, ever, ever watch episode 3 of this season. Just don't ever, ever watch it because you will literally quit Doctor Who.
Yeah, no, listen, I when we saw that it was Robin Hood, I said, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And at no point did I want it, and then on my Facebook feed kind of lit up today where they're like, oh my god, it's so good, it's so intense. So I was like, you know what, I do want to watch it, because like you said, the horror episodes are usually very, very well done.
Yeah. This one is written by Stephen Moffat, I will point out. And Stephen Moffat has a very, very good job. He always does a very good job of taking childhood fears, very simple childhood fears, and turning them into reality in terms of the way that he tells stories, right? Statues moving when you're not looking, the silence, all those different types of things, you know, the thing out of the corner of your eye, there's always somebody in the room with you. And so this whole episode is about being afraid of the dark. Like that's basically what it's built into is
interesting.
And he does it in a very cool way. So it's a very cool idea and a cool story. It just kind of ends. And that's the only thing, that's the only negative thing I have to say about the episode, because the whole rest of the episode was really witty and funny and entertaining. And, you know, like, it's very clear how they're writing Clara out of the show at this point. And it's very clear kind of the relationships they're setting up. It's fun. It's a really good time. So, yeah, you should watch it.
Will do.
Alrighty then, so that brings us to the weekly listener poll question for this week. The question that we have for you guys is basically what we were talking about. Do you feel that the Grey Knights Codex is the first codex that cannot stand on its own and that requires allies or requires to be used as an allied contingent? So you can find that question at jadegamercast.com. We'll have that poll up for you guys to vote on. We'll be talking about that next week, but hey, there we go. Whew. Let me drink some more scotch.
Just in time to be hungover for work in the morning. Hooray.
Isn't that the truth? That's the GamerCast. That could be the tagline. Data GamerCast, just in time to be hungover for Monday. Oh my god, that needs to be a bumper sticker. That has been
maybe that'll be a, like after episode 200, we'll relaunch with that as the slogan.
Well, that and we absolutely need a t-shirt that just says Deep Strike and the Plump.
You know, that are just like, I'm playing Gadar, you.
Gadar. Oh, that has been Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lying.
I am Nathan.
Have a good one.
Cheers.